Hello, and welcome to the Shentagold quarterly update. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I'll now hand the floor to our host, Erik Sjuren, CEO. Please begin your meeting.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thanks everyone for dialing into today's Q3 production and operations report for Shentagold. Just as a reminder, Shanta is the third largest gold company in Tanzania, and we're in good company with Barrick and AngloGold Ashanti, who are number one and two in Tanzania. As you'll hear today, Shanta is one of the lowest cost producers in Africa, which has generated a lot of cash for us in the most recent quarter. Joining me today is Luke Leslie, CFO of Shanta, who's on the line. Let's kick off on slide three of our presentation. What you can see, and to summarize Q3 for us, has been incredibly pleasing. We've seen nearly all of the benefits from our operational and financial changes that we put in place 18-24 months ago. We've seen these now coming through. In summary, the mine is doing its work. Deleveraging is happening faster than ever. EBITDA for us is approaching new records, and we're focused intently on finding more ounces for our mine plan. Q3 was a steady quarter of production. We had good cash generation. We produced 22,726 ounces at a cash cost of $474 per ounce and an all-in sustaining cost of $723 an ounce. Most importantly, about 90% of our gold sales were done at the spot gold price. We're comfortably on track to meet our production and cost guidance of 80,000-84,000 ounces of gold production at an all-in sustaining cost of $740-$780 per ounce for the calendar year 2019. Health and safety remains excellent and benchmarks amongst the safest gold producers globally. We're now just shy of 2 years with no LTIs, and something I think and our board says is remarkable for Africa and for underground mining. As I said, cash generation was very strong. We generated $16.5 million of EBITDA, excluding non-cash impact from our hedge book. On a run rate basis, this is around $60 million of EBITDA at the current gold price. Cash generation has obviously helped reduce our net debt, which has come down by $6.2 million in the quarter, bringing it down to the lowest level it's ever been in our gold producing history, just above $20 million of net debt at the moment. We're currently trading on a very undemanding multiple of about 2x trailing 12-month EBITDA. Turning over to slide four, as already mentioned, Q2 performance was very good. We're pleased with the results, and it was in fact, the second-best quarter of gold production over the last 2 years. During the quarter, we had a number of noteworthy operational improvements that took place. I'll take you through those now. First and foremost, Ilunga, which is our third source of underground material, was brought into commercial production safely, on time, and on budget. Secondly, I think very worth noting here around our power strategy. We're currently on the cusp of connecting part of our producing gold mine to the state power grid, which operates at roughly half the cost. This is something Shanta probably only dreamed about doing 7-10 years ago, and we are hoping can be done at the start of 2020 to be connected to the state power grid. During the quarter, we had a three-day plant shutdown, well scheduled. This was the annual MOTs, so to speak, for the processing plant. Routine maintenance all went according to plan, and that happened in July, which was naturally our lowest gold-producing month of the quarter. In terms of growth, in July, we announced exceptional drilling results at our Bahia Creek deposit and converted 84,000 ounces at 7.85 grams into the indicated category, fully replacing depletion in 2019 with new reserves. As you can see here on slide four, costs remain very well managed, and ironically, our AISC was increased by about $20 an ounce for the quarter because of the high gold price, taking on higher royalties on the selling price. Moving ahead to slide five, A bit of progress on our underground mines. During the quarter, we mined just shy of 150,000 tons of ore, grading 5.78 grams per ton from underground sources. We had a small contribution from open pit mining. As I said, Ilunga underground was brought into commercial production during the quarter, and naturally, a greater share of ore was sourced from that deposit, as you can see on the bars on this page. I expect that Ilunga contribution will continue to increase in Q4 as we activate more stopes and overall increase our operational flexibility. Development across all three underground mines is on track, so I'm happy to report that we're comfortable in terms of our headroom to ensure that we're on pace to meet our 2019 production target of 80 to 84,000 ounces. And noteworthy here is that development at the Bihini Creek deposit, where we had those very strong drilling results, has now continued. We're pushing the decline down to the 540 level, which is six new levels of mine life. So that work is now underway and effectively being justified by the positive drilling results we've just had. So that that is as clear cut as you'll see in terms of mine life extension. Moving on to slide six, this chart really just speaks for itself. We've had steady and robust production with continued focus on cost management and strict capital allocation. What that all means in a nutshell is net debt is coming down and coming down faster than it ever has over the last 2 years. At the moment, net debt to EBITDA is now only 0.3 times our run rate EBITDA. And most importantly, during the quarter, we've managed to improve our liquidity, which is now $11.6 million, including $5 million of unrestricted cash. On top of that, we had another, I think it was $4 million of bullion in the gold room at the end of the quarter. So overall, we think the balance sheet is in a very healthy state, and cash is increasing. On to slide seven. We've used this chart a few times in the past. Few months. It's an interesting illustration of how we see the split of equity and debt value in Shanta overall over the last 2 years. What you can see here is that Shanta shareholders now own about 79% of Shanta's overall enterprise value, which was only about 42% 2 years ago. What this really means for shareholders is that there's been a significant transfer of value from debt to equity since Q3 2017. And one could argue that the value of Shanta's equity will continue to re-rate as debt is extinguished. Moving on to slide eight, the most important driver of value for Shanta shareholders is by far exploration and mine life extension. Now that the balance sheet is largely repaired and debt should be even further reduced over the next couple of quarters, exploration has taken our top focus. What I can report here is that exploration drilling continued during the quarter. The drill rig will continue indefinitely as we go forward. And we're focusing on new promising targets, specifically here on this page. You can see them circled, Bespeci North and Elizabeth Hills North. So what you're looking at on this page is 21 square kilometers of our mining licenses at the new Luica Gold Mine. The processing plant would be smack in the middle of this rectangle. And these areas that are circled represent our top priority for drilling and mine life extension. Recall our focus here is specifically to source new ounces within our mine, for our mine life that are already within permitted areas and require minimal capex to bring online. So I'm really excited by what we're seeing so far with the drilling on the mining license, and it really just feels like the beginning. Over the next two slides, we'll take a closer look at BC West, Deep West, where we've just had some drilling results, and BC North and Elizabeth Hills North. So on to slide nine. These are the drilling results that we announced in July from BC Deep West. These results illustrate grades and widths that were much better than expected. We've been able to convert 127,000 ounces that were grading 3.15 grams per ton into 84,000 ounces at 7.85 grams per ton. So really the upshot here is on the back of six holes, we've been able to replace depletion for 2019, which in itself adds, call it 40 to $60 million of EBITDA, or another way of looking at it is we've added a new year of mine life on the back of very little drilling. When blended at a lower grade, with lower grade material, we're certainly able to at least increase, if not more, 1 year of mine life. So we're excited by these results, and this really gives us the impetus to do more drilling at BC Deep West over the next couple of quarters. On to slide 10, these are the other two targets that I mentioned, BC North and Elizabeth Hills North. Both of them are within about 3 to 4 kilometers of our processing plant. These deposits have been here for the last 2.5 billion years, but really have been under our nose and not really identified at all until the last 9 months, following some pretty specific work from external and internal exploration sources. So what I can report here is we've had drilling at both of these targets now. Drilling is ongoing in Q4. It's intersected encouraging mineralization with sizable widths. On average, we've seen 4 to 10 meter widths, suggesting potential for additional resources into the mine plan. Grades have been attractive, on average 4 to 9 grams per ton. And most importantly, these two deposits are within 70 meters of surface. So we're only really just getting going. They're open at depth. And as I said, drilling continues in the quarter to test the depth and strike at both targets. We expect to have additional results over the next couple of months. Of note, pay attention here at BC North. The grades appear to be increasing with depth. And specifically at Elizabeth Hills North, this deposit appears to extend from the already existing Elizabeth Hill deposit. So overall, pleasing and giving us a lot of encouragement to do more and spend more at these two targets. Now on to slide 11. I think it's important to say a few words on Tanzania. As we all know, it's been in the headlines for the last 2 to 3 years. And we certainly have had our fair share of news headlines to follow. Now, what I can report is the following. The operating environment is improving following Barrick's takeover of Acacia in September. I can say that I've spent time with Barrick since then, since that takeover, and it's refreshing to hear their approach. Mark Bristow's team in Africa is obviously hugely experienced and brings a highly successful playbook with it when operating across the African continent. So we're encouraged, and we're also very pleased to see Barrick as a stakeholder in Tanzania. Ourselves personally, Ashanta, we continue to have a strong and open relationship with the government. I was in country last week. I'll be in Tanzania next week. And what I can say in terms of VAT is there's nothing to report that suggests a VAT resolution is not forthcoming. The situation is obviously very fluid. As we've said over the last couple of months, resolution with Barrick in country, previously Acacia, is the catalyst for bigger things to happen for Tanzania in the mining sector. And we believe and we hope that such resolutions would be forthcoming in the future. In conclusion, the Q3 period has been rewarding. Shant has delivered on its commitments. We've done it safely with a dedicated all-Tanzanian team. And we've done it in an environment in Tanzania that is normalizing. With that, I'll hand it back to the operator.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to enter the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find it's answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question, or 02 if you need to cancel. Our first question comes from the line of Justin Chan at Numis Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks a lot for the updates. Quite a good quarter. I'm just looking ahead at Q4 and your guidance. What are your great expectations for Q4? You definitely saw a shoot up this quarter.
That's a good question, Justin. Okay, I'll cover that question then for Q4. What we've said is we're still targeting 80 to 84,000 ounces for the year. I think Q3 we saw kind of stronger than average grades. A lot of it came from Bohemia Creek. So, you know, what I would expect is Q4 to normalize back down to kind of the low 4 gram material through the plant, and which keeps us on track then for the 80,000 to 84,000 ounces.
Okay. Thanks. That's very clear. And on working capital, you saw a 2.1 million increase, just not including VAT. And you mentioned the 4 million of bullion in the gold room. What should we expect in terms of, does that wash out in Q4 before the end of the year? Is there an update on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to give my views. Luke, unless you want to provide some color on the working capital towards the end of the year.
Yep, sure, I can do that. So as you can see for the quarter, payables are down by $1 million. So I think we have a bit of room to those could go back up a little bit. On the inventory, again, that's also gone up, and we expect we may see some benefits on the inventory as well in Q4. Receivables is the one that's been the issue for some time, because that's the VAT receivable which went up by $2 million this quarter, and we don't have a time frame for when that might reverse.
Okay, but I guess payables and inventory, you could see the $2 million reverse in Q4 then.
Yes, I think that's fair to assume.
Okay, perfect. And then just on the you're doing some some good drilling. You've converted a year of mine life. Could you just remind me what your plans are in terms of a mine life increase and or rather a mine life update? What your thoughts are there, and also just on the grid power, would that come into that update as and when it comes through?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, Justin. I think it's certainly topical. What we want to do is we want to put out a reserve and resource statement for the end of the year, December 31st, and probably have an update before then on some drilling. And on the drilling we've just done, including a resource update, but at least give everyone some clarity at the end of the year what the status of the reserves and resources based on the drilling we've done. So we'd probably hope to put that out, I think, early 2020. But before that, at least give you some color, as I said, where the resources are shaking out from this recent drilling.
Okay. And with that update, do you expect to have like a mine life update and perhaps revised cost assumptions? Yeah.
You know, what we're finding, Justin, is we're certainly happy to kind of give color as to where our sustaining costs are, you know, in terms of power and the inputs. What we're finding is the mine plan changes so quickly given the drilling, the information we get back from the drilling. We'll be a bit careful around putting out too many different mine plans too regularly, which possibly might be too confusing. But we're certainly happy to take that offline with you and help you work through your own models if that's helpful.
Okay, sure, yeah. That would be great. All right, thanks a lot, guys. That's everything for me.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rupert Dyson at Edel Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Could you just clarify if I heard this correctly? You said that you thought electricity costs could halve by connecting up to the grid. So can you just tell us how much electricity costs are as a sort of number, roughly, in millions of dollars?
Yes. Hi, Rupert. So in terms of, I'll give you the unit and millions right now. So in terms of unit costs, we're currently paying about 21 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's costing us roughly, I believe it's about $11 million of HFO spend per year. So call it $1 million a month of heavy fuel oil. Now, what we want to do and what we expect to do before the end of the year or possibly in early 2020 is connect at least 10% of our power to the grid. So that would be 10% of the power at 10 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, what we would do is effectively, this is proof of concept, you connect a small amount to ensure that it works to non-critical items such as the camp. And as it does, ideally as the proof of concept proves itself correct, that the state power does work, we would then look to continue to increase to the state grid. Now, what we're told by the grid company is that there's 3 megawatts available for us in terms of capacity from the grid. We currently have a demand of about 4.5 to 5 megawatts. So there is scope to take that 10% state power to make it increase the contribution from the state grid, but we're doing it in steps so that we don't have any unforeseen surprises in terms of reliability.
Okay. And then a second question or area. Roughly on my calculations, you would go net debt-free certainly in about 12 months if we sort of carry on at current pricing and production and stuff. Can you just sort of answer the question around whether any sort of dividend payment might be on the board's agenda? I understand, obviously, we want to deleverage quite quickly, but just in terms of efficient balance sheet, you don't have to go to net cash. And a payment of, $3 million wouldn't make really much difference to the balance sheet in the company, but obviously would give a yield to the shares of 3.5%. So if you paid a $3 million dividend this year, I don't think it would make much difference to your deleveraging, but I do think it would be a good recognition of the change of enterprise value and debt going on in the whole valuation of the company. So maybe it's not necessarily question to answer now, but are the board looking at these sorts of options yet? Is it on the radar screen?
No, and that's a fair question, Rupert. What I can say is yes. It's one of the things that we're looking at, and as we see the balance sheet delever, it's something that is on the board agenda. Now, there's nothing approved, and there's been no commitments made, but it is certainly topical, and we're hearing it from a lot of our shareholders who are asking the same question. So, it's very timely that you asked that. And as I said, earlier, we're strict capital allocation means we're careful with how we spend our money. Shareholders at some point would like to see a return, and that conversation is on the agenda for discussion with the board.
Okay. Well, my last comment to that would just, I would be favorable for some sort of payment this year, because I think it then opens up new shareholders. And secondly, I think we only need to point to Anglo Asia share price to see that a dividend can be very helpful to valuations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if there are any further questions, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now. And we have a follow-up from Justin Chan at Numis. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Just wanted to follow up on the power. What is the timeline for, connecting, and when do you think you'll have a sense of perhaps how far you'd like to shift over to grid power? And is there any notable CapEx associated that we should be aware of?
Yeah, good questions, Justin. So the CapEx has already been incurred in Q3. The transformer is on site. The civils have been done. And, literally, we've said early 2020 for grid power. I believe it could be much sooner than that. But, what we'd want to do is ensure that it's fully working, de-risked, before we wave the flag and tell everyone that it's connected. So it could happen very quickly. As I said, the transformer is already on site and it's being connected at the moment. Now, in terms of when we would make a call on further increasing to the grid, the contribution, as soon as we believe the current supply of grid power is reliable and we're comfortable with that, we would then make the call to try and further increase the sourcing from the grid. The reality is we have the backup generators there, ultimately if we ever got to 100% state power contribution, the power station's still there in terms of backup. So the sooner the better in my view, because it's a huge cost saving.
Okay, perfect. So perhaps, Eric, just paraphrasing, in an ideal world, perhaps that could be coincident with the reserve update. You may or may not be able to make a call on.
Yeah, no, that's
fair. What level of grid power going forward, or some level?
Yeah, fair enough. And for 2020, we've assumed we'd get to 25%, in our budgeting assumptions. So of state grid power. So there's no reason that it couldn't even be more than that. Because that's we could. I'm sure we could do more. But again, we're just not making any promises because you just never know with African state grid power how reliable it is.
Absolutely, very prudent. Okay, yeah. Thanks very much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Charles Vaughan at Temasys. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Eric. Just so I got it, with this new exploration, with the BCs and the Elizabeth Hills, should we be thinking in terms of spending more for underground development? I think you've doing about $15 million US a year on underground development, which doesn't appear in your ASIC cost. Or will we see this? Does this want to go up because you're sort of venturing into new grounds?
No, it's a good question. I mean, at the moment, what we could say is in terms of underground development, the number I would use is BC, I believe it's about $7 million for next year, $7 million. And then, of course, there's a little bit at Ilunga. So it's just shy of $1 million a month. Now, the reality is our capacity on underground development is constrained by the amount of equipment we have. And so I wouldn't estimate that number would go up. It would, with more discoveries, it would simply be the same number, just being allocated in different places. So for us, what's important is having visibility on where we believe the reserves are, and giving that visibility to the market, and then over time developing those reserves into production.
Okay, and as things are going now, are you, and I'm sort of newer to the story than a lot of guys, but are you basically refreshing what you're depleting every year at this million a month rate?
In terms of exploration spend, to answer your question, yes. In terms of exploration spend, I believe we're just shy of $1 million of exploration drilling this year, which is, it's a very small number in context of the cash flow that we generate. So the numbers for next year, obviously, given what, the encouragement we've seen from the drilling results so far, we're naturally going to recommend to the board that we spend more money on drilling next year. I potentially even, add another rig to the fleet to get more drilling and more value for our shareholders.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, once again, if there are any further questions, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we have a further question on the line from Rupert Dyson of Edel Capital. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hi, Eric. Sorry, I just wanted to understand. I think you said that July was a slightly lower month, as a planned thing, and obviously that means the following 2 months must have been quite strong. So could you just elaborate a bit more on that? Was it a big difference or not?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So in July the plant was down for 3 full days, and we had the grades dropped at the end of June, so the start of July was a bit slow. Now, what I could say, July, I believe, was 6,400 ounces, and then August and September were both 8,000 ounces plus each. So it moved around a little bit. The grade came through the second half of the quarter, August and September. And, as a kind of rule of thumb, we like to see a pretty steady 7,000 ounces a month is kind of what we're targeting. But it just goes up and down literally on grades and certain things throughout the month.
Okay, because if I don't know if there's anything seasonal, but if I look at, and I know you've shifted the way the mines work, so maybe it's wrong, but your Q4 number in 18 was 23,900 and 21,300 in 17. So top end of guidance implies only 19,000 in the last quarter. And I'm just trying to work out if there's anything, apart from being prudent, is there anything we're not aware of in the fourth quarter that might be affecting things?
I would put it right down. Yeah, Rupert, I put it down to the management team just being prudent. We just don't want to overpromise. Yeah, there's nothing in particular in the fourth quarter to think that
no change or anything like that.
No, okay. It's very steady. We're just being prudent.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. And as there are no further questions on the line at this time, I'll hand back to our speakers for the closing comments.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining the call. Looking forward to a strong finish to the year and hopefully more of this normalization in Tanzania, which we believe will come hopefully sooner than later. So thanks very much and have a nice day.
This now concludes the conference. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.